Proudly presented by the U.S. Army, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 92-year-old John Fitisoff of Tracy, California. At age 17, he quit high school to join the Merchant Marine. He told his Russian immigrant mother at the time that he wanted to sign up so he could go find his older brother, Jim, who was already serving in the Army. Their first reunion came at a place called Good Enough Island.
When we got there, I got one of the trucks that was unloading their stuff and taking it up to where the camp was to ask them to give me a lift up there to see my brothers. So we went up there, and I went to the tent that had its headquarters and told them who I was, and I'd like to see my brother. I understand he was here. So the lieutenant told the sergeant. Sergeant, he says, take this fellow here over to Fedosov's tent. So we went over there, and the sergeant hollered out, Fedosov! And you can hear Jim back say, I wonder what I'm going to do, peel potatoes again? Yeah. So, yeah, what do you want? He says, you got a visitor. So he comes out there, like I say, where we saw each other. We didn't know whether to laugh or cry. But anyway, that was a reunion that I'll never forget. And so we turned around and left there, and I think it was a month later we came back to Good Enough Island. So I went to where their outfit was camped, and there was nothing there but a tent with a sign, headquarters. So I went over there and I asked him, I said, you know, I come here to see my brother. He said, yeah, we remember you. That was quite a deal, you know. He says, well, he's not here now. I said, well, boy, he says, I sure would have loved to have seen him. He said, well, wait a minute. So he took out a pad and he wrote a note on that and everything, and he told me, here, take this and give this to the officer at the Australian jetty, and hey, they'll take you out to the ship that your brother's on. He's on a ship out there anchored. So they, sure enough, they took me out there, and so I went aboard, made my salute and everything, and the officer, they asked me what I want. I explained the story. So on the PA, Jim Fedosov, report to the gangplank. So sure enough, my brother shows up. He did it, peed in his pants. So that was, we met a few minutes and talked, and because I had to get back to my ship. So I got back to my ship, and about, I don't know, whether it was 2 weeks later or maybe 3 weeks, I don't really recall. But that ship that he was on, he was going up to the invasion of Hollandia, New Guinea. See, New Guinea was split in half. The southern half was Australian mandate, and the northern half was the Dutch mandate. So this was the name of the village was Hollandia. So we pulled into Hollandia, and I find out that my brother's outfit had made the invasion on that on Hollandia. So after a bunch of inquiry, here I am. I'm on a truck going up to where the hell they were, you know. So again, he nearly peed in his pants, and we celebrated. Oh, I made it back to the ship, still another miracle. Anyway, we got on the ship, you know, and back. So that was three times now. And then there was actually a fourth time. The fourth time was we got notice that my brother was coming to Dibble Hospital. That was in Menlo Park. That's where they were bringing the wounded. And they told us, you know, just, you know, be a little bit careful, you know, on how you talk to him, because he right now, he had lost both eyes. He was close to another trooper that stepped on a mine or released a mine or whatever it was, and the dirt came up and it penetrated his chest and his face, and the dirt and the small rock penetrated his eyeball, so they had to take out his eyes, and they were going to work at putting those plastic eyeballs in his head. So he was really a character. He was a lot of fun to be with. You know, like when they brought him in and they set him down, they said, okay, Jim, now we're going to be working on your eyes. And what color eyes do you want? He says, well, he says, how about a pair of blue ones and a pair of brown ones And they said, what do you want that for? And the gray ones. He said, what do you want that for, Jim? He said, well, he says, when I wear my blue suit, I'll put on my blue eyeglasses. Yeah, it went on. Yeah, but it was amazing, you know, after the war, what he was able to do. He had saws. He'd work on saw. He had a shop built in the back of his house where he had his tools. He had a lot of fun working on that stuff.
Well, a lot of things come to mind as you tell me that story. You know, it's interesting. I've heard so many stories about brothers in the war. And I've interviewed guys who they signed up because their brothers were POWs and they wanted to go back and rescue them. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Or my grandfather met up with his brother over there during the war who ended up getting wounded. So you've seen your brother three times already. And then you find out that he's been hit with this mine, with this shrapnel, that he's lost his eyes. How did you find that out?
The Red Cross or some government agency, you know, advised us that, you know, he was there in Dibble Hospital and that we could come and visit with him. And what it was, they flew him out of, like, in Guadalcanal. That was kind of the staging area for the wounded that came in there. And it was like a triage, you know, where some could good enough to go back by ship. And some of them could be repaired and put back on the front lines again. And other flew back. My brother, they flew him back by plane.
And you're still just a teenager. And here your only brother has lost both of his eyes in this war that you've been involved with, too. How hard was that to wrap your brain around? Or what were the emotions that stirred in you?
Well, I guess I thought I should have gone, you know, into a branch of the service where you can really mix it up with the enemy, you know, get some skin out of them. But that's all over with. That's another different story. I met a guy and talked to him, and he was in Japan, and he fell. They surrendered with the Japanese, and that he was in a death march and everything. We were talking about that, and we, you know, the enemy, and I didn't care too much for him. He says, well, you know, John, you know, let me explain something to you. He says, while we were in these prison camps, we were really treated really bad. He says, and as the war was moving more in our favor, they kept moving us up further and further towards Japan. And he says, we were in one of the islands in Japan, and all they had was a barbed wire fence, because where the hell are you going to go on an island in Japan? You could escape? And they gave them a little plot of land to work with, to make their vegetables and grow their own vegetables. So he was by the barbed wire fence, and he heard this psst, psst, and he looked over. There was a Japanese woman that also had a garden that was growing on the other side of the barbed wire fence. And she moved over closer to the fence, and she motioned him over. So he moved over to her, and she lifted up her apron, and she pulled out some vegetables. I don't know. In other words, she gave him some food. Now, had the guard that was guarding the place, if he saw that, that would have been a dead woman. So he says, John, he says, not all people are bad. It's your leaders that are bad. And I never forgot that up until this day from what I see in Washington, D.C. going on.
Well, back to your brother. When you see a guy, and this is, you know, this is 1945. Technology isn't what it is today, and the accommodations for handicapped, disabled are not what they are today. So when you see a guy in his 20s with no eyeballs, what did you think his future was going to be like?
So the last ship that I was out, they told Jim, okay, now we're going to send you to a center for the blind for rehab. And that's in Avon, Connecticut. So the last ship I was on, we went down through the Panama Canal. We came up the East Coast. We stopped at Wilmington, North Carolina, and we stopped in New York, and then we stopped in Boston. So I'm scratching my head. I said, Boston, I think that's somewhere pretty close to Connecticut. So I explained the whole story to the officer on my watch. He talked to the captain. So they got their heads together, and he says, okay, John, you can take a hike. Go to the bus depot and go to Avon, Connecticut. He says, it's not very far. So I did. So I got out. he did repeat his pants again. So I went and visited him again, and then I had to get back because I didn't know when the ship was going to be leaving. But anyway.
Well, let's talk about your experience in the Merchant Marines, the ships you were on, the duties you had, what it was like for you.
Well, it was, you know, just like anything on a merchant ship, you know. You never knew where you were going to go or where you're going to wind up at, you know, and you didn't know when a submarine might be around that you didn't want. And then like up in New Guinea, there were a lot of they were cleaning up the area, you know, with the Japanese. And they'd come over at night, the bombers, and they'd drop a few bombs. That's just to keep you awake, you know. But the real big one was, let me go back a little bit. I was on a ship where we went down to San Diego, and we picked up a lot of Marines, and we brought them over to Guadalcanal. But on the way to Guadalcanal, I noticed a lump under my arm. So I told the officer on my watch, see that on these troop ships, they always had a area set up for medical, you know, because they had all these troops on that ship, yeah. So he talked to the doctors there, so they said, well, it's too early now. What we'll do is a couple of days before we get to Guadalcanal, we'll lance it, you know, and drain it off. So they did that, and anyway, then they tested my blood, and they said, this don't look too good. It even looked like it might have appendicitis. So they decided at that time, you better get them, we'll get them off the ship at Guadalcanal and put them in the hospital. You know, well, the hospital was a Quonset hut, you know, painted camouflage with a big red flag on the top of the Quonset hut. But inside it was painted nice and white. So anyway, they took me off that ship. I didn't have anything but my underwear. The guy didn't have a chance to get nothing to get, not my wallet. It was nothing. So they took me off the ship and they put me in the hospital in Guadalcanal. And like I say, that was where they were coming out of the front. And that was an experience in itself, just to see in the way some of these boys were coming in, you know.
Tell me about that, because most of us have never or will never experience anything like that. When you say how they were coming into the hospital, what were you seeing, and how did you process that?
All you saw was stuff you didn't want to see, you know. I mean, who wants to see a lot of blood and a lot of people with body parts? The guy that was next to me in the bed, he was telling me he was on one of these Higgin boats, and he was, I forgot where they were, what invasion they were. Well, anyway, we were hitting towards the beach, and a piece, a big chunk of shrapnel came between his legs and tore out the meat in both of his legs. But he says the important thing, he says, my family jewels are okay. The only good, let me tell you this, the only good thing that happened with World War II is that we won. Outside of the rest of it, it's all a bunch of, you know, misery. There's thousands of young men that'll never get married and have kids, you know. They're laying in a plot of land someplace in some foreign country. So anyway, I had the most respect in the world for them guys.
Quite a variety of emotions John Fitizoff is stirring for us today, but we're not done yet. You can find photos and a short video of John online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And when we come back, we're going to hear what this teenage merchant mariner experienced at Okinawa in 1945. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Some people see the challenge and say, send me. Some hear, it can't be done, and say, I'll do it. Some choose to stand for something bigger than us all. If you're ready to step forward and do your part, then you might be ready to become a soldier in the U.S. Army. It's a diverse team that works together, trains hard, and adapts every day to be ready for anything that comes next. The U.S. Army turns soldiers into leaders capable of split-second decisions, extreme focus, and maximum endurance.
These warriors lead their squads on missions armed with more than good intentions. They inspire their fellow soldiers to do better on and off the battlefield, making the Army a lethal and ready force. U.S. Army soldiers blaze a trail that leads to freedom. Do you have what it takes? Find your place on the team. Contact your local Army recruiter or visit goarmy.com/warriors. To talk to a local Army career counselor, call 559-323-1099.